Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the National Women's Law Center Early Childhood Update, Funding and Reauthorization Prospects. All lines have been placed on a listen-only mode. If you should require assistance throughout the conference, please press star zero to reach a live operator. At this time, it is my pleasure to turn the floor over to your host, Helen Blank. Ma'am, the floor is yours.
Hi, this is Helen Blank, and welcome to today's audio call, Early Childhood Update, Funding and Reauthorization Prospects. Due to the large number of registered participants, callers' telephone lines will be muted during the conference. If you'd like to ask a question, please email your question to achanon@nwlc.org, A-C-H-A-N-N-O-N at nwlc.org. Questions may be submitted at any time during the call. We have four speakers today with a big agenda of six important developments. We'll talk about the state of the overall budget, FY 2012 appropriations as they impact early childhood, good news, the state of the FY 2013 budget, the status of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, ESEA, reauthorization, and issues in the Senate bill that impact early childhood, the status of reauthorization plans for the Child Care and Development Block Grant, and the status of the competition for Race to the Top Early Learning Challenge Grants. This is a very opportune day here. Joining me are Adele Robinson, Deputy Executive Director for Public Policy and Public Affairs at NAEYC, who will focus on ESEA. Hannah Matthews, the Director of Child Care and Early Education at CLASP, who will talk about CCDBG reauthorization. And Harriet Dichter, National Director of the First 5 Years Fund, who will discuss the Race to the Top Early Learning Challenge. I'll be starting off by talking about the FY12 and FY13 funding and budget issues. As you know, the situation around the budget is very fluid and not very encouraging for the long term. The super committee that was created by last summer's Budget Control Act failed to reach agreement on a strategy for achieving $1.2 trillion in savings over a decade. As a result, we now face something that we have talked about before called sequestration. This process would trigger automatic costs of $1.2 trillion over a 10-year period. The first round of cuts is now slated to take effect beginning January 2013. That is calendar year 2013, not fiscal year. By law, specific percentage cuts will be applied to a number of categories of federal spending. As estimated by the Congressional Budget Office, defense programs will be cut by $454 billion over 10 years, a 10% cut in 2013, declining to 8.5% in 2021. Non-defense appropriations, including Head Start, WIC, the discretionary portion of child care funding, about $2.1 billion, would be cut a total of $294 billion, with percentage cuts from about 8-9% in 2013, down to 5.5% in 2021. The first round of cuts would be made through across-the-board proportional reductions in the new funding provided for each program. Low-income mandatory programs, such as TANF, food stamps, or SNAP, child nutrition, including the Child and Adult Care Food Program, child health, and the mandatory portion of child care are exempt from the automatic cuts. Veterans Medical Care and Pell Grants are discretionary programs that are also exempted from the cuts. Child care is unusual in that it is funded in two ways, mandatory and discretionary, and that is beneficial under this scenario. After 2013, non-defense discretionary cuts will be accomplished through the normal appropriations process, program by program, but will have to fit within tight caps for non-defense appropriations. Pell Grants will have no special status in this round of cuts. There has, as you know, been discussion around the possibility of exempting the defense cuts from sequestration. If this happened, it would result in even deeper cuts in domestic programs. The President has said he would oppose efforts by Congress to back out of any parts of the sequester and urges them to find a more responsible way to reduce deficit. Advocates are working on how to cope with a potential sequester, but luckily it's somewhat early in the process and we're not at all sure how it will unfold since we have an entire year before it is due to take effect. Efforts might be made to ensure that defense programs are not exempt from across-the-board cuts, and we urge you to follow alerts around this issue. A sequester could also be revoked or the time period for a decision extended. It's all quite murky now. A number of you participated by phone in meetings at the Coalition on Human Needs coordinated on the Supercommittee's debate. We were grateful for your willingness to be a part of this process and share the gaps in early childhood in your states and communities. We're going to continue working hard to let Congress know how important these programs are and how harmful cuts would be. Meanwhile, Congress is, as we speak, in the midst of passing a budget for FY 2012, the current fiscal year, which began in October. Right now, we're operating under a continuing resolution for the appropriations bill that affects early childhood and school age programs. And it expires tomorrow, December 16th. But we're in a pretty good place. The Senate had marked up a bill and increased Head Start funding by $340 billion, left CCDBG funding flat and had $700 million for Race to the Top, some of which could be used for a second round of early learning challenge grants. The House never went through a formal process of marking up a bill. Their chairman, Representative Reber, released an unofficial bill that increased Head Start by $540 million, left child care funding flat, but had no money for Race to the Top and made deep cuts in many programs, and also had a number of very controversial riders or amendments to the bill. This bill never went through the regular appropriations process. It was never marked up. Even so, members have now reached agreement on the contents of a final FY 2012 appropriations bill. And in a tight budget situation, the numbers that we got today for early childhood advocates give us something to cheer about. Head Start was increased by $424 million, which will allow the programs that were started with ARRA funds to remain open, something we were concerned about. Child care received a small increase, an additional $60 million. Race to the Top received $550 million, less than last year's $700 million. The bill has a statement of managers which indicates that they expect a robust early childhood component from Race to the Top. Title I was increased by $60 million. There'll be a slight across-the-board cut of 0.189 in these programs, possibly a little more after we see the final bill. We had believed up until this call that the bill's passage was caught up in debates about the extension of a payroll tax bill, but the breaking news gives us the sense that both parties are moving on disagreements, both around the approach bill and the extension of the payroll tax and provisions around unemployment. It is possible that we see a final appropriations bill passed and enacted into law today or tomorrow. If this breaking news does not come to pass, which is of course possible, we could see an extension of the continuing resolution or CR for a certain time period. But the news this afternoon is quite good, and the news on early childhood is also quite good. At the same time, the administration is working on its budget proposal for FY 2013, which the president releases in early February. It promises to be very lean. We're all urging the administration to include increases in funding for Head Start, CCDBG, and to support another round of Early Learning Challenge grants. There will be a call-in day this Monday. There's a lot going on, but remember that call-in day, Monday, December 19th, to urge the White House to support these increases that we will talk about later and explain what we'd like to have you do. Adele, can you now move us to the status of the reauthorization of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act and how the Senate version would impact early childhood?
Hi, everyone, and thank you for everyone on the call. You may have been following that there was a committee markup in the Senate chaired by Tom Harkin of Iowa. It's a nearly 800-plus page bill, which includes numerous references to early childhood. Now, as you know from our previous calls, all of the big early childhood programs since 1965 or their creation could be used for programs and services for children as young as birth, but few school districts were taking that option in the past. Now we have more explicit direction and encouragement in the bill marked up in the Senate committee, taken in large part from Senator Casey's Continuum of Learning Act. These are not mandates to do certain things. That wouldn't work in this kind of fiscal and political environment. But it does move forward the birth date period as a special period needing a child development approach and standards, teaching, and support for teachers. So I'm going to go over some of the more important aspects of the Senate's approach, which are new, for early childhood. In its Title I plan, the State Department of Education must coordinate on its plan with the State Early Childhood Advisory Committee. At the local level, local districts must consult with early childhood representatives on their Title I plan. In Title II, which is about professional development, there's an explicit reference to using Title II funds for joint professional development between community providers and schools. Third, we got into the coordination section of the bill, reference to the Head Start Act MOU between Head Start and school districts, which mirrors the Head Start Act language in 2007. Fourth, the bill would incorporate two signature initiatives into ESEA, Promise Neighborhoods and Race to the Top. The secretary would be able, at his discretion, to use Race to the Top funds for early learning, the joint administration with HHS, and the same goals stated as the current Early Learning Challenge Fund, which I know you all know this, but it bears repeating, to create a system as well as services to meet the needs of low-income and disadvantaged children. We had some objectives in the early learning community that we did not yet achieve at this point in the process. For example, we didn't get in language to ask states to review and revise their first through third grade standards to address all domains and be based on child development. It also doesn't include yet the Ready Schools language from Senator Sherry Brown and Kay Hagan's bill. So now let's turn to timing. It's possible that the Senate will go to the floor in January, although there's no news that makes that certain. Meanwhile, a reminder that the Hirono bill, which is essentially the same as the Casey bill plus the Hagan-Brown bill combined, is sitting in the House, has been introduced. However, the House chairman, John Klein of Minnesota, is handling reauthorization very differently than the Senate. He is splitting up the ESEA into parts rather than one big reauthorization bill. He is very focused on more flexibility with different ESEA funds, charter schools, and other aspects, and it's unclear at this point to what extent he will favor the same elements for early childhood to be in the House version that became part of the Senate markup. So again, we expect some Senate action, not sure when, to create an incentive for the House to remove its remaining parts. We're also hearing that it's quite possible that this will leave room for the House to move some more, and the Senate will come after.
Thanks, Adele. Hannah is now going to talk about activities around the reauthorization of CCDBG.
Thanks, Helen, and hello to everyone on the call. So it's now been 15 years since CCDBG has been reauthorized. The last time was during the peak of welfare reform in 1996. But now we have a new chairperson of the Subcommittee for Children and Families in the Senate, Senator Barbara Mikulski from Maryland, and she has expressed interest in moving a bill forward to reauthorize CCDBG. The ranking member of the subcommittee, North Carolina Senator Richard Burr, has also expressed his interest. Over the past year, Senator Mikulski has held two hearings on early childhood. A group of national organizations that came together to develop the agenda for affordable, high-quality child care, some of you might know that as the Child Care Vision, we've also been working to pull together a more modest blueprint based on this agenda and taking into account as well some of our increased knowledge and perspective since the agenda was created several years ago. We plan to discuss with the committee a number of reforms for the bill relating to health, safety, and quality provisions and approaches. This includes items such as requiring inspections for childcare programs, training for providers and a stronger professional development system, and background check requirements. We also plan to discuss strategies to encourage higher quality care in low-income areas, improve child care assistance policies, ones that would make it easier for families to keep subsidies, ones that would encourage continuity of care for children, as well as developmental screening, and better coordination between child care and Head Start and state pre-kindergarten. We also think there are important areas for research, including how to develop a better way to link race to equality for those receiving CCDBG funds. We plan to discuss assurances that states do not cut back on the number of children currently receiving child care assistance or the rates currently paid to child care providers, given that there is so much unmet need and rates are unacceptably low. Finally, we are saying that more resources are needed to support this important program. At this stage, it is not clear whether there is interest on the House side in moving a child care reauthorization bill. We are focusing our efforts on conversations with the Senate staff. It's also unclear what funds may be available for a reauthorization, given the overall budget and the climate in Congress, as Helen has discussed. And of course, add to it the fact that we are now will be in an election year. This complicates matters even further.
Thanks, Hannah. Harriet is now going to talk about the status of the Early Learning Challenge grants and support to both states that have obtained grants as well as other states that have laid out ambitious plans for improvements.
Thanks, Helen, and thank you, everyone, for dialing in to listen today. So I think, as we all know, we have seen just an incredible interest in the Early Learning Challenge. It was a really hard application, and the states had only 8 weeks to complete it. So in that context, having 35 states and the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico complete the application is really an amazing feat. And so I certainly offer my congratulations to anyone on the call who participated in your own state process. Now, I think as many people probably know, the White House will be hosting an event at which Secretary Duncan and Secretary Sebelius will be letting us know who will receive this first round of awards on Friday, tomorrow. And so we don't have any inside scoop to share about who will be receiving the first round of awards, but we do know that the official announcement is slated for tomorrow morning, and there'll be live streaming of that so that everyone will be able to see around the country, not just those who are in the auditorium in Washington, D.C. I'm going to now sort of flip to round two, all right? So we have round one, 37 applications, really, really healthy degree of interest, and, you know, a huge amount of demand, basically well beyond the dollars that are available to us. Helen mentioned at the outset of the call that the appropriations process looks like it's going well in our favor in terms of the federal government being able to host a second round of an early learning challenge. There is proposed to be money, $550 million, that would be available for Race to the Top, which is, of course, the vehicle that was used for the competition that's now coming to a close. And there will be opportunities then for the administration to decide to hold an early learning challenge competition as part of those Race to the Top money. Okay, and the exact nature of that we don't know yet, but there is good opportunity, and I think we will all have to remember as advocates that originally the administration had asked for $350 million for a round two early learning challenge. We know that we will not be able to get all of the $550 million, but hopefully the great demand from the states will allow there to be a good, healthy share of resources for a next round. I did want to share with people basically some fast facts about the applications that were turned in because I think they help us to understand really how much the states are seeing and understanding the comprehensive needs of our children in the early learning sphere. So states, as you know, did have to make choices in these applications about their focus for the challenge. And here are some of the trend lines across the 37 applications. 30 or more of the states elected to address the early learning standards section, both sections on workforce, kindergarten assessment, and data systems. So that's a pretty comprehensive approach there. 27 states, that's about 70% of the applicant pool, also included comprehensive assessment as something they plan to tackle. And then finally, we saw the smallest categories of choices, and that turns out to be between 18 and 24 of the 37 applicants, selecting to focus on health, mental health, behavioral health, family engagement, K-12 linkages, and private sector involvement. So I think what we can take from this is that we are seeing that the states are really pushing themselves and creating innovation within their states, as well as actually pushing out some new ideas for everyone in the country through the Early Learning Challenge. And finally, I just want to note that we do see across these applications some states seeking to work ways to work with other states to develop joint projects, to be able to leverage their ideas and work in multi-state ways to try to be efficient in using the resources and to really get greater impact in terms of the challenge and the opportunities for children in communities around the country. So we'll have to stay tuned basically for the official announcements on Friday in terms of who is selected in this first round. And then, you know, going back to what Helen said, as Congress works to firm up the fiscal year 12 budget, that we'll look forward to basically seeing through the appropriation for Race to the Top and work then to secure some resources for round two for the challenge, and finally to basically advocating for inclusion of what we hope then would be round three in the fiscal year 13 budget proposals. So thanks, Helen.
Thanks, Harriet. As you can all see, this is an exciting time, especially today and tomorrow, and a challenging time. There's great interest in early learning and improving children's chances of future success by investing in their early years. This coincides with a drumbeat of pressure to cut back on spending and cuts across the country on in child care assistance for low-income families. It will be important for advocates to keep urging members of Congress to support improvements in early learning policies and the funding necessary to achieve them. The payoff that we get by investing in young children and the important role that child care plays in helping families work certainly justifies significant new expenditures. It is, as we have mentioned before, equally important for advocates to point out that we cannot move forward on early learning or other key supports to families unless we also deal with support to increase revenues or taxes. A number of you participated in a webinar that National Women's Law Center sponsored on how to talk about taxes, and fact sheets are available to help you make the case on our website. We realize that there is a lot going on. It's an election year, which makes forward movement in the Congress even more challenging. All of us in AEYC class, the First 5 Years Fund, and NWLC will be sending out regular updates to keep you informed about the process as things proceed. We'll be offering a conference call on how 501c3s can work in an election year. We can all start by asking your field and colleagues and friends to call the White House this Monday, December 19th, this Monday, and urge them to include significant increases in funding to support early learning programs, including child care, Head Start, and Early Head Start, and Part B and Part C, and funding for the Early Learning Challenge in their FY 2013 budget. You may have received alerts from organizations already. We'll send ours out on Monday morning, but please ask your networks to call in. When all those calls go to one phone line, we can really make a difference. When we ask people to call Congress, we know that we have calls going to lots of different members. But if we all call the White House, they'll hear us loud and clear. Let's take some questions now. We've got two questions based on the funding situation. It's a 0.189 across the board cut. Be taken off the current baseline funding or the baseline plus increases in Head Start, CCDBG, and RTT? Well, first, the Race to the Top isn't in there separately. There's no RTT Early Learning Challenge Fund. It's all in just as Race to the Top. and we assumed the cut would come against the new funding levels. The next question was, does 5 years of funding for the current RTT Early Learning Fund competition all come out of the 2011 appropriation?
It was 4 years.
And Adele just pointed out it was 4 years. Or is funding for years 12 to this year's 2012 to 15 contingent on the appropriation process in each of those years? For this particular challenge, it all comes out of the FY 2011 appropriation. Hannah, what has the House said about CCWG reauthorization?
Well, we don't really know at this point whether there is interest in the House in moving reauthorization forward. So the current efforts of the groups that are working on reauthorization is really focused on working in the Senate, where we know there is expressed interest from both Senator Mikulski and Senator Burr.
There's another question. There's two questions about the sequester. How does the FY12 appropriations bill relate to the sequester? The sequester would happen if it happens based on the FY13 appropriations bill, because it happens in in January 2013. So if, you know, we know appropriations bills are slow in coming lately, but technically that's what would happen. Someone also asked to re-explain which early learning programs are protected under the sequestration process and which might face cuts. As I said, the mandatory portion of child care, which is $2.9 billion, is not under the sequester, nor are TANF funds. And so all the child care that is funded out of TANF in the state would not face an automatic cut. Head Start, the discretionary portion of child care, which is now a little above $2.2 billion in the latest, newest appropriation, Race to the Top, Section 619, Part C, anything that's a discretionary program would face cuts. Harriet, can you talk about what competition would look like for a second round of Early Learning Challenge grants?
Sure, Helen. I'm happy to do that. So not surprisingly, we actually don't know the full answer to that question. We would anticipate the same framework that we saw from the first round, a focus on systems as well as services to at-risk infants, toddlers, and preschoolers, and the provision of high quality as a baseline requirement. But the federal government, through the Departments of Education and Health and Human Services, will be able to interpret this and to advance what they think is most essential and consequential. I think we would hope, given the exceptionally robust interest from the state in that round that is now being wrapped up and getting ready to announce, that people would be heavily influenced basically by the acceptance of that framework and by the embrace of that from the first round of applications. But we will have to get through the rest of the appropriations process and then hear from the administration basically around the particulars and the specific requirements that they would have in mind for a round two.
Thanks, Harriet. Here's another question for you from Eleanor Hirsch. How can we ensure that the territories, Virgin Islands, Guam, Marianas, are included in the second round of Race to the Top Early Learning Challenge grants?
I believe, and Adele, I know you're there and looked at the language, that the language as put into the legislation will keep the federal government on the same pathway in terms of who would be eligible, although I believe there is an option that they could allow resources to go to local districts, which I guess could help to meet that need. Adele, can you reflect a little bit more on that as well?
Yeah, and this is just where we are in the process. Let me just remind you that on the ESEA authorization around the Challenge Fund, because remember it was originally authorized in the fiscal year 2011 approach bill with only about four lines. So what it says is that states could apply or districts could apply. We still think this is a state system program, and so we have urged to be clear that we, our preference is that states be applying and, of course, working across all the sectors, which would include schools, in the birth to five system building process. If you have concerns that you are excluded by language like that, you should let us know so that we can let the appropriate members of the committee hear that. We have only gone through markup. We're not near the floor. And so there is still time if you feel that the language, which we can send out, doesn't cover you.
Okay, we have another question from John Morgan to Hannah and myself. What if the reluctance of the House to take up CCDBG reauthorization seems like a huge barrier? What can state-level advocates do while concentrating on the Senate side and moving it there, then provide the impetus for the House to take it up or not?
Well, we would agree that it would be a challenge to work with the current House and really move a bill forward. Particularly one that we would all like to see with some improvements and some resources behind it. That said, I think that at this point, as we move forward and put some of these ideas on the table on the Senate side, advocates can continue doing what you've all been doing so well, which is keeping the drumbeat going for early childhood, and we're going to hope that we continue to raise some visibility and hope that there will be some interest in the House to move forward with us on this agenda.
It's a very challenging situation to get a bill through the Congress in 1 year. In the old days, we used to do that with Head Start, and the House is obviously a very challenging place to work now. So, you know, you do the best you can, and you hope some activity, even if it doesn't finish this year, will give you impetus to eventually get a CCDBG reauthorization off the table. But you know, it's a short year, too, because of the election, and members are going to have a lot of things on their mind. But have to keep trying. Somebody asked about after school and where were we with the 20th Century Community Learning Centers program. The 21st Century Program provides about $1 billion for after-school care. CCDBG is actually a bigger source of after-school care than 21st Century. We've been concerned about after-school care because there have been some communities that have just discussed or actually limited CCDBG to younger children, and it doesn't appear that 21st Century is going to pick up the slack. There's actually was a lot of discussion, and it actually, I think, happened in the reauthorization in the Senate draft, to use more of 21st Century for extending the school day, which is interesting, but it doesn't make it available for, you know, consistent before and after school care. So there's been a lot of controversy about the purposes of 21st Century over the last year. So I think we have a challenge out there for all those younger children who need a safe place after school. I want to also just ask what the status of Head Start competition is, and when can programs expect to hear?
They should have
heard. Adele?
I believe that announced that the programs would hear around December 9th.
Yeah.
Anybody else have a contradiction to that?
No, that's what we think. And that just means they'll hear whether they have to be part of the competition. And then there'll be notices around the competition. A question from Eleanor Hirsch. We would be most appreciative if you would advocate on behalf of the Territories for Inclusion. According to the original wording, only the states Puerto Rico and the District of Columbia are eligible to apply. I hope with a new round of funding this could be amended.
Thank you.
That was very fast responding to what we said. We appreciate that.
Another question from Janet Whalen Couch. Is there anything new regarding campus child care access means parents in school grant funding? This is money to help campus-based child care
I actually looked. Adele's shaking your head. Did you see anything? Is it the same? It was about $16 million last year.
This is, all of us have only skimmed the bill, so I don't want to say much, but the activity, the advocacy around activity around campus seems to have fallen off a little bit, and that listserv really needs to rejigger itself if you're on it or we're on it. It's such a small program, and sometimes people forget about the small programs, even though they're meaningful.
And all of the organizations on the call will be sending out full details when we've had a chance, when the bill finally passes, and we've had a chance to look at all the specifics on funding levels. So we'll be sure to include information on campus and other programs.
But we don't have any reason to believe campus was cut. I just looked, too, this morning, and I couldn't seem to find it. I think the bill actually doesn't list every single program. You need to get a chart, which they haven't released yet. We have another question from Susan Antos. In New York, could Hannah provide more detail on the proposals that are being made to improve child care assistance policies and to ensure continuity of care in CDG? Before Hannah talks, let me make this, clear. We're just beginning discussions with Senate staff on issues to talk about in reauthorization. So we're at a very preliminary stage, but we do have some interesting things to offer up. Hannah, do you want to talk about those?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So what were some of the policies that we're looking at? First, I think it's important to point to some of the policies that the Office of Child Care has recently put out in an information memorandum on how to improve continuity for children. And so you can see a lot of overlap, I think, between the ideas that we're discussing and those that are in that memo. A big one is that we are really looking at urging for annual redetermination for children so that they would not have to be redetermined based on changes in parents' employment or income over the course of a year. So making CCDVG more similar to Head Start in that sense. Some of the other things we're looking at are ways for states to mirror some of the policies that private pay parents use, so covering absent days when children are absent from care to make sure that providers continue to be reimbursed for those days. Those are some of the things that we've been looking at.
We just got a clarification on Head Start that the Office of Head Start will be notifying grantees sometime this week. Anyone with a deficiency since June 2009 will be told they will need to recompete. Calls for applications are supposed to go out in early 2012 with the goal of having things settled and in place. There is no interruption in services to the community for the school year. It got delayed from last week. So that's on the way. Another question, this is for Adele. Is there specific language about a Title I pre-K set-aside in the Senate ESEA bill? Are there any changes in Title I funding in the FY 2012 appropriations bill?
Hi. It was a little increase for Title I. Remember, it's a very big program of $60 million in the appropriations bill. The set-aside question, everyone from advocates to the administration has gone round and round. And there's really no way to do a uniform set-aside in all of the 15,000 districts in America that received Title I money. So rather than a set-aside, there is more impetus for local school districts to use their option of using their Title I money for younger children. We've seen a lot of interest in spending more Title I money on pre-K in particular. Let's not forget that you can even do developmental screening, you can do the wraparound services, you can even pay for some home visiting if you wanted to out of Title I. But the set-aside seems to be difficult to do a uniform provision and doesn't seem to float very well.
Thanks, Adele. Here's some sad news that we know. California is basically dismantling the entire early care education system. Another 4% cuts to child development programs will take place January 1, 2012, making it extremely difficult for low-income families to access early term education programs. Do you have strategy for working with the state of California legislators to stress the importance of early care opportunities for children, and the fact that the U.S. Department of Education is encouraging continuing support of policies for early care and learning. We know that California is in very bad straits on many issues, including early care and education. There was a very good piece that many of you probably saw. We were very excited to be featured in it in the New York Times yesterday that talked about low-income women's difficulty accessing child care assistance, and California was one of the states that they used as an example. You have some great legislators from California. George Miller is the ranking member of the Senate Labor Committee. Nancy Pelosi, the minority leader in the House, has always said child care is one of her top issues. So we're going to keep, you know, advocating. We're going to try to get yours and other states' challenges out, you know, out front the best we can. It really helps if you share with us what's going on in your state. Carol Burnett wants us to talk about the reauthorization process. She's concerned that we not push for more requirements without adequate funding to pay to meet these new requirements. Can we speak to this concern?
Well, Carol, I think we share your concern. Certainly a lot what we're doing right now is really trying to put some ideas out there and start a conversation. An important part of that conversation is going to be letting the senators know that a lot of these elements that we think are important really do take money. And so resources are at the top of our list to have dialogue.
We felt it was important to give them a plan that was somewhat substantial to begin with and not to start at the end process. And we do, as Hannah said, well know that these changes require additional resources, and we heard you.
So can I just weigh in here too, Carol, because I this is Harriet, and I, you know, want to reinforce here that, and I've said this to Helen many times, I think we have to actually be quite unapologetic about what are factual statements around the need for additional investment. And I know this is hard for everyone, but if you even just go back to how we started the call, where Helen wrapped up where things stand now in terms of where we think we'll end with the federal fiscal year 12 appropriations, you can see that while we have some opportunities there for more resources, and we are so very far away from the level of investment that we need, that for me, I want to be very encouraging for people to not just get ourselves just entirely in a defensive posture. It's hard because our circumstances are so difficult, but, you know, again, our needs are very great and they're so well substantiated in terms of the demands basically for the kids that we're trying to serve.
We all definitely agree. Thank you, Harriet. I got an email from a colleague yesterday after the New York Times article and said, well, how can we fix this? And I said, with more money. And he said, besides that, I said, well, I'm not sure there's a besides in this case for all those moms, you know. So it is important to be clear. Alicia Washington wanted us to clarify that if across-the-board cuts are expected in the appropriation bill this Friday, will it impact the additional slots added to Head Start due to IRA funding? I believe so, but they're going to be very tiny. They're minuscule across-the-board cuts. So I don't think it'll affect your ability to serve your Head Start children in those IRA classrooms at all. Well, Jenny Paul Rappaport out there in California just heard rumors that California got an ELC grant. Have you heard about anything leaked about the winners? Harriet? Adele?
No. I think there's a pretty tight list, and I think you should be waiting for the announcement that will happen between 10 and 11 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time tomorrow.
Harriet, I'm with Adele on that. And you can watch it live streamed, you know, and so everyone can hear officially together.
And we wish you all luck. And we wish there was more money in it. That looks like all the questions we have time for today. Thanks, Hannah. Thanks, Adele. Thank you, Harriet. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. All participants in today's call will receive an email in the next few days with an audio file and links to additional information about the budget and appropriations process. We'll also be putting a written transcript on our website, and others will too. If you have additional questions, please feel free to send them to us at hblank@nwlc.org, and I'll share them with Hannah, Harriet, and Adele, and we'll answer them to the best of our ability. Here's a quick one. For everyone on the panel, what would you say was the most significant development in early learning during 2011, and what are you anticipating in 2012? Who wants to go first? What's the most significant development in early learning during 2011, and what do you anticipate in 2012?
I would be pretty broad about it. I think as a community, you have done an extraordinary job in some of the worst fiscal times, not only being sometimes flat funded, but increased in child care, Head Start, and then the Early Learning Challenge Fund. Many important programs have actually been cut, still cut. Somehow, we've been able to move the interest in early childhood to a little more political will. So that's my biggest takeaway is you've done an amazing job, and it's really impressive to see how all of that work, even though it feels like small numbers, is really big in the total scheme.
I agree with Adele. As I walk around the office, everyone says, oh, my goodness, how did that happen? So if you look at what's going on across the Congress, I think you should all congratulate yourselves for your hard work.
I agree with that. I just want to add one more thing because I do think it is amazing given the difficulty, the environment, basically where the resource investment or has been able to move for early learning. Not to say that we don't have a lot more work to do, but the fact is everyone's work around the country is pretty important. The second thing that I would want to add is one of the things people have heard me say that I really like about having this first round of the challenge out there is that now we've had the first opportunity really very clearly for the two federal agencies, education and HHS together, to articulate an early learning framework. And that early learning framework came from state leadership. It came from the incredible work people have been doing in their communities around the country. And so it's great, actually, from my point of view, to sort of see that kind of call and response thing and to have a frame that is put out that is really building on many just incredible work that people have been doing basically and creating in their home communities and home states.
Thanks, Harriet. Yeah, and I think Adele put it perfectly, and I hope that given how well we've come out in 2011 and 2012 in these tough times, I hope we all continue working this hard and can have the same excited news to share in 2013.
Well, Hannah, that fits right into what you have to do on Monday. Have everyone you know call the White House this Monday to ask for significant increases for funding for early learning. They've all the agencies have been told they have to make significant cuts. So they have not put this budget to bed. They need to hear from us. Also remember that your members of Congress will be home for a month-long Christmas recess. It's a good time to encourage members to visit early childhood programs. It's important to keep it up. Even if they've turned you down before, ask again. Again and again, we thank all of you for the work that you do every day for children and families. As we just said, we continue to be successful in increasing policymakers' awareness about the importance of the early years, and we have to keep pushing forward even in these very complex times. Children only have one chance at a high-quality early childhood experience. It's our job to make the case now. Have a wonderful holiday season and stay in touch. Thank you all.